Are you ready? It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 292 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm really glad you're listening because this is a special one, as I present my interviews from San Diego Comic-Con held just last weekend. First up, you'll hear my chat with Scott Snyder from Metal, followed by Batman creator Tom King. After that is Steve Orlando discussing Justice League of America, then Robert Venditti, who continues his acclaimed run on Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. Next up is Joshua Williamson, who talks about The Flash, which is running fast. The last two interviews are from two creators new to the show, Tim Seeley, who's set to take over Green Lantern soon, and then everything wraps up with Gail Simone talking about her upcoming Wonder Woman Conan crossover. As always, I gotta make special thanks to Charlotte Sandler from BH Impact, as well as the folks at DC Comics Publicity who made all this happen. One quick word of warning, I got a new microphone and it's taking some breaking in, so you'll occasionally hear a pop or a crackle, but hopefully that won't be too distracting. There's a lot to get through this week, so let's get on with the show.
Good to see you again.
Scott, good to see you as always.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Right down to it.
Sure, let's do it.
I'm talking right now with Scott Snyder, who is now working on Metal, where Batman's still prominent. How are you doing, Scott?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, man. You guys are always so nice to us. I love major spoilers. You're great.
Well, I appreciate it. Now, why don't you talk about Metal? We've seen two prequels, and now we're starting to get towards the series itself. What can you tell us about it? Because we've seen all these surprises in the prequels.
Yeah.
What kind of things are we going to see in
Metal? Well, I can tell you, that's really just the lead-up. It's like meant to be one of those books that reminds you of the kind of kid joy you felt reading comics, reading summer events, where you turn the page and it is the return of characters you didn't expect, surprises, new characters. It's a really simple story at heart. It's essentially about the Justice League discovers that there's an actual dark multiverse that exists beneath the multiverse. And that multiverse is about to invade. And when it gets here, the only thing that'll stop it is Nth Metal, one of the rarest and most mysterious substances in the universe. And there's only a little bit left. So it's sort of a giant epic kind of summer event story with a really, really simple and fun premise. The first wave of attack are these nightmare Batmen, the Dark Knights, that come, that are really fun. They're almost like these badass versions of Batman that are his worst fears about himself. So it's just one of those ones I want you to feel like if you've never read a comic, you can come in and be immersed in it and have a really fun time. And if you know the DC lore, it's got stuff from Infinite Crisis, Final Crisis, you know, Crisis on Infinite Earths, to Grant's Run, to All-Star Super, all kinds of crazy stuff is laced in it. So I'm really, really proud of it as a kind of love letter to DC Comics from me and Capullo and the art team.
What's it like working with Greg again? You weren't very long apart, but it must be great to be working with him again.
It's a joy, man. We can't thank fans enough for when they let me work again with creators that I'm genuinely friendly with, like Greg, like Raphael Albuquerque, like Jock, like, you know, other writers as well, like James Tynan, Josh Williamson, Steve Orlando. It really means the world because these are people you like talking story with, that you like making things with. And Greg is sort of the pinnacle of that for me, where we're brothers, you know, we're family at this point. And to be able to use the entire DCU as our canvas, every character, every mythology, every event, it is the most fun I've ever had writing comics in my life. And I think that will show page to page to page for Greg as well in the art.
Now, of course, Nth Metal leads us to a certain character or a group of characters. Will we see Hawkman or Hawkwoman in this?
Yes.
We've seen them a little in the prequel. We saw them once. Are we going to see more about them? Are we going to see them integrate in the DC universe, or what kind of things do you have planned for them?
Yes, you will. You're going to see them integrated, and it's in a way that's going to honor kind of everything that came before when it comes to Carter Hall and Kendra and Shiera. And then on the other hand, I think it'll also bring in new elements that you won't expect.
Well, now, of course, Batman, it's great to see you writing Batman no matter what it is. I'm sorry All-Star Batman's coming to an end. When this gets done, and this might take a little while, do you have plans of what else you're going to do?
Yeah, I already have my next book at DC lined up, so I'm excited. But I'm still, while that's happening, I'm still going to write the stories that I plan on doing on All-Star in a new format with Sean Murphy. Like that one, the story I was going to do with Sean Will, we're starting it next month, in fact. So it's just going to come out not in All-Star in a way that's going to foreground the art a little bit more, but it'll be kind of the same thing.
Because All-Star Batman's been great fun to see you deal with these villains we haven't seen you do before.
Yeah, well, that was the whole joy of it, to get to do different kinds of Batman stories, different villains, different artists that I've worked with, all of it. Just try sort of a whole prism of different approaches to the character, almost explore him from these different diverse angles.
So after Metal, we might still see you do some Batman?
Oh, I am. I'm 100%. I'm doing a story with Sean Murphy. Right. I have one with Lee Bermejo. I think one with Paul Pope still. But I want to do it in a way that isn't the monthly grind, where it's more like you get to do it as a book and it comes out, or a series that's separated from that monthly hamster wheel. And DC's been very kind about setting up really exciting ways to do that, so I can't wait.
I love the whole concept of Metal, and you drink your setting up the DC universe looks like it's going to be quite a lot of fun. So how long does it go? How many? We're coming to the end. How many issues do we have in Metal? Do you know?
Yeah, so Metal itself is 6 issues, with one in the middle that's kind of a intermission issue. It's got 6 issues. Then we have these one-shots that are the Dark Knight books that all tell you the origins of these Nightmare Batman and what their plans are in the DCU. And then we have a set of crossovers that run through Justice League, Flash, and Green Lantern that show our characters, the Justice League, throwing down with these Dark Knights in this big, flat-out steel cave match brawl. It's going to be awesome.
Well, looking forward to it. Thanks, Scott, for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Major Spoilers and you and everybody involved. Thank you.
It's great to talk to Tom King, the writer of Batman, and who's bringing on Mr. Miracle. And how are you doing today, Tom?
I'm doing great, man. I'm at Comic-Con. I'm surrounded by nerd. I'm having a good time. How are you doing?
Good, good. I've got to say, you've developed the Midas touch, and I want to start by Batman and Elmer Fudd.
Yes, thank you.
I mean, that book sells here for $40 a copy. And I think you caught people by surprise by writing such a great book. And, you know, nobody expected Elmer Fudd to ever deem up with Batman. Well, talk about that book. What was it like putting that book together?
I went to Dan. I had a little time off. I was actually ahead of my deadlines. I said, Dan, I want to write something. I want to write the next Killing Joke. I want to write something huge and ambitious and wonderful. I was like, what do you have to work on? He's like, how about Elmer Fudd? I was like, and you know, because he's my boss, I didn't say, no, it's insanity. That's the weirdest idea I've ever heard. I said, all right. And then, like, I just got this image in my head of him cocking a shotgun and being like, it's bat season. And I was like, oh, well, we could do something with that. And then I talked to Lee Weeks on art. And Lee and I go way back, but I've never actually worked with him before. We've just been friends. And, I mean, this is not a secret, but Lee's like a Christian. And I was like, Lee, I'm going to do this thing. It's going to be super violent, and it's going to be, like, about the 80s, but you know, Fudd's killing people. And he's like, you know, dude, I'm a Christian, and I don't want to draw a bunch of blood and guts. And I was like, oh. I was like, well, what do you want to do? He's like, why don't we do a noirs thing? Why don't we do something like they did in the old movies where the violence, you know, it's about the relationships, not the violence. And I was like, Lee, that's perfect. So once he said that, I could see a film. I went and watched a bunch of, I'm a huge old movies fan, so I just went and watched a bunch of classic film noirs. And then I started writing. It was the most fun thing to write I think I've ever written. And then Lee drew it, and I literally sent him an email, 100% true. I was like, Lee, I do not understand why you are drawing this so well. Like, you are drawing this as if you're on Watchmen, and I've never seen art this good. It's one of those beautiful, it's probably the most beautiful book I've ever worked on. And he's just like, oh, I'm having fun with it. So I mean, Lee should get all the credit for the whole thing.
Well, Bugs Bunny, ain't I a stinker all that time. All the great lines that were in there and used very effectively, I thought, in that story. I just think people thought Elmer Fudd, this was going to be the one that doesn't work, but you fool them all. You got everybody to, everybody who has the book now is very glad they bought it.
Well, I, you know, my mother was a Warner Brothers executive, weirdly enough, and in the 90s, and it was when they were really pushing sort of Looney Tunes as their corporate, I don't know, whatever. So she'd get all this swag, all this Looney Tunes swag. So I grew up in a house where my Christmas tree was all Elmer Fudd's and Martian Manhunter, and there was a huge Martian Manhunter poster on my wall, and like that was like I grew up with them as part of my DNA, so it was easy to write that kind of stuff.
That's great. Turned out super well. Batman and Elmer Fudd 2.
Lee and I are working on something right now, some secret project.
Okay, well, we won't talk about then, but it could be Batman and Elmer Fudd 2, but we'll find out when things get announced.
I will say that I think in my head that's in continuity. My, even though he's wearing the trunks, I realize. But in my head, that was the return of Silver St. Cloud to the
right,
DCU.
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of Batman, let's talk about the Batman book, because you're doing what I think. Your writing has really progressed to a fantastic level. I think the Riddler and the Joker, you told somebody once, I understood, that you can't do the Joker unless you have your A game. And I think you are in your A game now with the Riddler. That war between the rails and the jokes is just fantastic. I think it's just one of the best Batman stories I've written in a long time. And you're up against Scott Snyder and other people too. This is just doing wonderful stuff.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I should say, like, oh, yeah, I started off knowing exactly what I'm doing, and every Batman story is perfect. But it didn't, I mean, I love Batman number one, but the first arc, it took me a little bit to find my sea legs, because I was still looking for my, I was trying to write for others and not write for myself. I didn't know how to bring myself into Batman. I was a little scared, honestly. And if you're writing scared, you're not writing good. And it took me a while to sort of see, like, okay, I can see what I can do with Batman. I can see the emotional core of the character. And now I feel like I'm there. Now writing Batman is the greatest joy of my life. I love Bruce Wayne. I love how he turns grief into triumph. I find him incredibly inspiring. And so I'm glad that's coming out in the work.
When is Bruce Wayne going to find out what Catwoman says to his proposal?
Issue 32.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
We're
on 27 now.
Oh, wow. You got to wait 5 months?
No, 5 years. We're double shipping.
That's right. So 2.5 months.
So, yeah. So we have 4 more issues, right? 4? That's it. 4 more issues.
Well, it'll be worth the wait, I'm sure. But we better talk about Mr. Miracle while we have the time here. Let's talk about bringing a classic Jack Kirby character back and what you're going to do with him.
So I wrote this Vision comic, right? And the pitch for Vision was super simple. It was breaking bad Vision, right? It's just like Vision turns evil. But I couldn't tell anybody that was the pitch because it spoiled the whole thing. I wanted people to not really know. I wanted it to be the boiling frog. You didn't sort of realize when Vision had become evil by the end, when he had sort of made the decision to kill the Avengers. The same thing's true with Mr. Miracle. I can't tell you the pitch for Mr. Miracle because it would spoil the first issue. So I can just talk about kind of the BS themes of it and that stuff and the ambition of the project. And the project's really on my attempt with Mitch Garaz to follow up a work like The Vision. And we say, can we do something like that's as good as Watchmen and good and New Frontier and Dark Knight Returns? Things that weren't just comic books, but things that talked about their time, that really talked about their moment. And became sort of literary and almost transcendent. And the answer is no, we can't do that. It's impossible to do that. But it would be stupid not to try. It'd be stupid not to be ambitious and do that. And try to do something great, you know? Try to make comics as good as comics has ever been. And that's what I wanted to do. So Mr. Miracle is about sort of this current moment in time. It's about this feeling we all have when we wake up in the morning and we're like, the rules I thought that ran life don't make sense anymore. I mean, that's everything from our current politics to the freaking Cubs winning the World Series. I mean, it's like, I feel like every day I'm a little bit trapped under a thing I don't quite understand. And so when you want to talk about trap, the perfect person to talk about that is a super escape artist. In fact, the god of escape. So that's how we got to Mr. Miracle.
He's not going to try to kill the Justice League or the New Gods, is he?
No, but it is the most violent comic I ever wrote. I didn't expect that. It's really violent.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when's it come out? When's the first issue?
August 9th.
So it's not far away.
And I think it's going to be... People who got... If you want to avoid paying $40 for a FUD comic, buy Miracle One, because I think it's going to be... You're going to have... That's my tip to the audience.
Well, Tom, I do think you have the Midas touch. I can't wait to see what you're doing next. It's all great fun. Keep it up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, thank you to you and your audience, man. I mean, you guys are literally putting my kids through college, and you're giving me the best job anyone can have. So this isn't about me. It's about you. It's at the end of the day, and I appreciate it.
Talking right now with Steve Orlando, the writer of Justice League of America for DC Comics, among other great things. How are you doing today, Steve?
I'm doing real well, Wayne.
Talk to me about Justice League of America, because that's got a long history. What was it like taking over that book and providing such a unique cast of characters?
I mean, it was a huge honor. One of the first modern books I bought was Justice League of America, the Grant Morrison and Howard Porter run. And I had been reading the back issues from the 80s all my childhood, so to be able to take part of that and get a Justice League number one, very intimidating, you know, as you said, like, there's a ton of history there, there's a ton of characters there, but exciting. You know, I wouldn't be in this if I didn't say I didn't want to be part of Justice League. So a very exciting moment, and to be able to showcase these characters that maybe weren't getting a spotlight somewhere else, kind of like Justice League Detroit, kind of like the Justice League International in the 80s, really, really fun for me.
Lobo, why put Lobo in the Justice League?
You know, you need someone to give a little disruption to a team. You know, if you're going to build a team around Batman being in charge, you need someone who doesn't sell Batman's authority at all, you know, that just doesn't buy it. And I think that there was that element in, like, the 80s with Guy Gardner, and we even had a little allusion to that in the Rebirth issue. And I think you need that firebrand that is going to be there to when someone who know it, to question the person that no one else questions.
How about the Ray?
The Ray is there because you need a young point of view character. You need someone's optimism. Like, he's the other counterpoint to Batman because he is so blindly optimistic and faithful in people's potential for good and possibility. So for someone like Batman who's based around pragmatism, and you know, always having a plan, inherent in always having a plan is always assuming that things could go wrong, and you want someone that has that sort of youthful energy and says, you know what, no, people deserve a chance from the start.
You know, the Ray right now is getting his own cartoon series on the CW. Is this going to tie into that?
I don't know that it'll be a direct tie-in, but we're hopefully, you know, inspiring each other. A lot of the Ray's characterization, we got a chance to get there first, and I think it does make him unique, you know, that he is able to give people the benefit of the doubt, and he is able to bring that sort of powerful hope to a scene. You know, the CW has a lot of characters that have a lot of baggage and a lot of drama, so I hope he's there to sort of cut through that and bring the brightness, no pun intended, that he does to the Justice League. I think that's on point for his character and what he went through, so hopefully we can inspire them to that.
Killer Frost, how about her?
Killer Frost comes from Justice League Suicide Squad, and it is, you know, that's her arc is sort of symbolic of the character motion that Batman is taking and had took in that arc in Justice League Suicide Squad. This idea, you know, he has not been a guy built around second chances, and Frost showed him, contrary to what he has long thought, that sometimes people can change and sometimes people can make a commitment to being better. So we're the team that is supposed to embody America today and the world today and be something that can give us all hope and a way to get to the future. This idea that we can change, that we can better ourselves, that's what Frost is there for. Because this book is really, hopefully, you know, an inoculation that'll get us into, you know, it'll get us into tomorrow and everything past that. It's a team that is different, with different backgrounds, that doesn't always agree, that finds a way to better each other and move forward, and that's what we need. So she's there to symbolize that, and the whole team really is there for that reason.
Is that the same for Vixen?
Vixen is there. I mean, she has that point of view more than anyone else. Her Tantu totem connects her to every other living thing in the planet. So that sort of idea, we're all in it together, sort of like the realization Lex Luthor has in All-Star Superman. She knows we're all in this together, because when she taps that totem, she can actually see that we're all connected through the life web. So it's not a theory for her, it's a sure thing. And so, yeah, she needs to be the figurehead for that. And honestly, she's there because she's someone that has done everything Bruce Wayne has done with it and started with even less. You know, she's there to be someone to remind him that You can be every, you can come from the place he came from, and you don't have to be this dark figure of judgment or things like that. You can have balance, you can have happiness in your life, and hopefully she brings that to the team and brings it to him as things go on.
Okay, you led right into my next question. Batman. What do you have to do to keep Batman balanced with, like, the other Batman book? You know, books that are in the DC universe. Do you work with the folks, or is he sort of a separate place in your book? How's that work?
Well, a lot of what's going on in the other books leads to where Batman is in Justice League. You know, we've already seen in Detective Comics he's building armies. We weren't sure why. Now that Metal is coming along, we have a good idea that maybe that there's something to do with that. And so I think that he is on edge more than ever in the history of the DC universe. What's coming is worse than ever before, and so he is more desperate before and more willing to take risks. Now, in Justice League of America, maybe it's a bridge too far, and that's something that we are sort of examining about his character, because we've been there, you know, like, how many New Year's resolutions do we make on January 1st and break on January 5th? The Justice League of America, a team of equals that is symbolizing what the world needs to be to combat this coming threat, he knows that's what he has to do, but it's something he's never done before. He's never ceded control. He's never ceded superiority. So that gulf between what he sees must happen and what he is emotionally, mentally capable of, that's a lot of his struggle in the book, and maybe he won't make it, you know, and maybe things will be tougher than ever before for them if he can't. But I think that's humanizing for him. Batman has always stood for our struggle in the world. And sometimes, you know, we have to realize that we set goals for ourselves, we don't make them, and then we have to move forward from that. So a lot of his struggle in the book and in the DC universe right now, I think, is about that mortality. It's about that fallibility. And that plays not just in Justice League. It plays in Detective. It plays in Batman, certainly. And it'll play in Metal as well.
How's the response been to Justice League? I've been pretty happy with how fans have taken to the book.
Yeah, I think people are excited that we are a Justice League book that does things in a way that no other Justice League has done before. And that's great. You know, the people understand, you know, power is an important thing. And people are responding to the fact that our team does act differently. There's already teams that come in and say, we're going to do X, Y, and Z for you, and we're going to handle your problems for you. But the Justice League, with, you know, all the people you've asked about, you know, with the exception of Batman and Lobo, come from diverse backgrounds. And I think that's valuable because they have different relationships with power. They have different relationships with authority. And so by definition, this team, with them on it, will do things differently. And our Justice League is every bit as powerful as every other. But they're a resource for people rather than coming in with their pre-subscribed solutions for any type of situation. And people responding to that, you know, is a metaphor for how they would want help from structures and authority. It makes me happier than anything else with the book.
What do you have in store for us in the upcoming issues of Justice League of America?
Oh, man, Panic in the Microverse. Could not be more excited about it. Ivan Reyes, Felipe Watanabe are coming back to the book. Ivan's doing 4 issues. Felipe's doing 2. And we're doing Star Wars in the Microverse for the DC Universe. You'll see places you've never seen before. It's just new settings, new characters, new ideas in every page in a world that, to scale, is bigger than anything else in the DC Universe. It's small to our point of view, but if you're in the Microverse, you don't call it the Microverse. You call it the Immensity, because it's so big, the whole thing hasn't even been explored yet. There's so much for us to explore there. And at the end of it, you get a little teaser for something new at Doomsday Clock as well, so it's a pretty exciting story.
So this is integrated as a serious part of the DC Universe.
Absolutely. I think that you'll find things... you'll find the reactions to things going on in the DC Universe in Justice League every month. And you'll find the driver for things with the next step in Doomsday Clock, with the repercussions of Metal when it's going on in Justice League as well. So if you want a book that has, I think, one of the coolest and you know, most eccentric rosters in the DC Universe, that also shows you the ground-level view of all of these massive events and shows the real cost, the real stakes, the real drama of those things, Justice League, that's the book for you, my friend.
Great. Well, Steve, great fun. I'm sure this, as well as your other things, are going to be continue to be great stuff, so keep it up.
No, thank you very much. I'm going to try to.
It's great to talk again with Robert Venditti, who is keeping Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps soaring every time an issue comes out. At least that's what my brother tells me. How are you doing today, Rick?
I'm doing pretty good. Thank you.
I wanted to talk about the Sarko storyline, because people are still talking about that, even though that kind of, in some levels, wrapped up. Talk about that. Has the reaction been what you expected?
Yeah, I think we caught a lot of people by surprise. The way we ended that arc, it was actually a huge moment for the series, where you find out that this villain who comes back from the future to try to eradicate the Green Lantern Corps is actually the future child of Saronic Natu and Kyle Rayner. It was an arc that people responded to well, because it also had Rip Hunter in it, and there was a lot of things people liked about it. But it also plays a key role in the next arc, Fracture, which is sort of the big culmination of the first year on the series. I think if you go and you look at this last arc, you will see how every single arc is a part of also this last arc. If you read them each individually, you got a complete story and you're fine. But if you're reading the Fracture arc, you can see how we built all of this out, going all the way back to issue number one. So that's kind of the way I like to plot stories, and I think we've been able to pull it off successfully.
Well, it's really,
issues coming out, 25 will end that storyline this Wednesday.
So, 25 issues isn't a bad story arc, though, if it's a good story arc.
It is. It's a very long form story that's divided up into five smaller stories, but also because it's a double shift book, it was only 1 year, you know what I mean? So it's like my first year on the series, but because it comes out twice a month, it's 25 issues. So.
What was it like turning Hal Jordan, because normally Green Lantern had been a single character book, what was it like to turn that into like a team book for a change?
It's actually what I really love about it, because I feel like we've been able to do something that hasn't really been done before in the Green Lantern history, which is to take those four classic Green Lanterns and put them all in one book for a sustained amount of time, you know? And so we've got Hal, we've got John, we've got Kyle, we've got Guy. They're all, you know, successful Green Lanterns, very good at what they do. They all have the willpower it takes to wear the ring, but they all come at that willpower in very different ways. And what I'm trying to do with this series is lean into their unique traits and show why Guy is the best Green Lantern for this situation, and Hal is the best Green Lantern for this situation, and John's the best Green Lantern for that situation, and really let them shine in their individual moments, you know?
Is it going to give away too much if I ask if you're going to do another 25-issue arc? Or is it, because that's the way you like to write them?
Well, you know, in monthly comics, you never know how long anything's going to go, you know what I mean? But I am already building out my next long-form arc, which I've already written. Like, 25 comes out Wednesday, and I've already written 8 issues ahead of that. So I'm already building up my next big storyline. I don't know if it's going to take 25 issues or 16 or 30. I don't know. You kind of figure it out as you go organically. You know what I mean?
Well, that's a good thing, because I've known people who have said you got to write a 6-issue arc to fit in a trade. And it never works out quite that well. It always feels like they stumble here or it slows down too much there. Is that a better way for you to kind of let it develop naturally?
Yeah, for sure. I try to stick to 4 issues per story, because I feel like you keep the series moving forward. Every 4 issues, it's a new jumping on point, new story arc, bring in new people. But if it feels like it's only 3, I'm not going to stretch it to 4. If it feels like it needs to be 5, I'm not going to cram it in, you know? My first arc was 7 issues. I just wrote one that was 2, you know, so it just depends on the story, you know.
Now, one of the things that happens, of course, with the way that you're doing the books is that you get to work with different artists. Has that been a challenge or has that been more fun? How has it been working with different artists?
I love it because I'm able to even tailor each story to each artist's strengths, I feel, you know. And I've been able to get far enough ahead in the script that, like, the Fracture storyline that we have going on right now, which is 22 to 25, Ethan Van Sciver is going to draw that entire arc all by himself. The next story that comes after that is Rafa Sandoval. We're doing a New God story, 4 issues. Rafa Sandoval is drawing all 4 issues, you know what I mean? So even though it's a double shift book, we're doing whole arcs with one artist, which is really hard to pull off. But it allows you to write to what you think each artist wants to draw, what they do really well, and make the stories all the better for it, you know.
Do you get to pick the artist, or does DC come and say, well, we'd like you to work with this artist? How does that work?
A little bit of both. You know, a lot of times the publisher will say, we'd like you to work with this person. Sometimes they'll come and say, here's a list. Who would you want to work with? And other times they'll say, hey, do you have any ideas on who would do this story well? So it could be a little bit of everything, you know.
I got to ask you a question. like my brother says, that, this is the greatest book that DC makes. And there are a lot of people who agree with
that. I love your brother. You know, he sounds like a great guy.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of people who agree with that assessment. They consider Detective Comics and Hal Jordan to be the two top books that DC makes. What's it like to write one of the top, what's considered one of the top books in DC Comics? Is there pressure? I mean, it must be pressure for
that. No. I mean, I don't know. I guess I don't really think about it that way. I'm just trying to tell the best stories I can, the way I know how to tell them, and I hope people like them. So I love that your brother and people would say that it's the best book DC publishes. I would disagree. My favorite book they're publishing is Pete Tomasi's Superman. But, you know, the idea that I would ever write anything that somebody would want to read or be excited about or talk about is it's humbling every time, and I feel so thankful and fortunate to be able to do what I do. You know, my dad sold concrete, you know, my mom was a court stenographer, and this is what I get to do for a living. You know, it's kind of amazing. So
I'll tell you a quick story. My brother was talking to James Tynan IV about Detective, and he mentioned that he liked Green Lanterns and Detective were his two favorite books, and James responded, I'm in great company if that's where you put my book.
James is a nice guy. I love James. Yeah. And he's doing a great job of Detective, too. I love his Clayface. Great stuff.
So you've got things planned out for a while, so we can expect some good stuff coming. That if the first 25 issues are any indication, we should enjoy the next 25.
Yeah, like I say, the next four issues is an arc with the New Gods, where the Green Lantern Corps and the New Gods sort of team up to defeat this ancient threat that has resurfaced to destroy the New Gods. And then they just solicited the arc that comes after that. It's going to be two issues I'm doing with Patrick Zercher that involves Superman. So Hal Jordan's going to team up with Superman for a little while. And that's probably as far down into the future as I'm allowed to talk. Yeah.
Okay, well, we're looking forward to it, Robert. You're doing a wonderful job, and the books are great fun to read, so please keep it up.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I'm talking right now with Joshua Williamson, the creator on The Flash, who's got a whole bunch of things going on with Flash, really challenging the hero. How are you doing today, Josh?
Doing great, man. I love Comic-Con. It's awesome here, yeah.
It's crazy stuff. Talk about what you've got right now, as the when this posts, your conclusion with the Reverse Flash is going to have aired. What can you tell people, you know, now that people have seen it, what did that accomplish for you as writer of The Flash to have that battle go on?
I mean, you know, my favorite Flash story of all time is Return of Barry Allen. And, you know, that's a Thawne story. You know, that's Eobard Thawne messing with Wally. And that is a Wally story, but it's also very much a Barry story. You know, like, there's a lot of, even though Barry isn't actually there, you know, his presence is very much felt because of Thawne posing as him throughout most of that story. And we got to see a side of Thawne in that, about how obsessed he was with Barry, that he wanted to be him. And so I wanted to re-explore that. Of course I wanted to write Thawne, you know, so we were seeding it from the very beginning, and then we brought him back in the button, and then we were able to keep going with him and do this really big story. And he's very interesting to write, you know. It's more than being crazy. It's more than being obsessed for him. And so being able to write this character, and he's a little erratic, you know, and he likes to antagonize, and he likes to, you know, mess with Barry. And I love writing characters that do that with Barry. They get under his skin. I mean, we did that at first with Godspeed, and then we were able to bring in Captain Cold and the Rogues, and they very much do that. And so, you know, we were able to come back and do a Thawne story. And for me, like, getting a telethon story where I also got to kind of, you know, not redo his origin, but add to it. I was really trying to take all the things that I've loved from Mark Waid's run and Jeff's run and show this version of Thawne that we hadn't seen in a long time. You know, he's not the Joker. He's not some big, crazy, you know, insane villain. Like, he's a guy who was disappointed by his idol and now wants him to suffer for it. And, you know, he is obsessed, and it is very much a crazy person, but it was fun to write him, so I'm trying to get to it. It was really fun to write this guy. But at the same time, it was cool to be able to write Flash 25 and touch on his story in a new way and show a new light on it.
Talk to me about who you see Barry Allen is. If you had to tell somebody real briefly, who is Barry Allen?
He's the nicest guy you'll ever meet. You know, I think that Barry Allen, I feel very close and very personal to Barry at this point. You know, I think he's a very, very nice guy. He's genuine. You know, he's very hopeful and optimistic, and he really does believe in the best in people. He is a little obsessed with justice, you know, and I think almost to a fault at times, you know. But he is a person that you know when he tells you something, you can believe him, you know. And I think out of all the Justice League characters, he's the one that loves being a superhero the most. You know, if you think about, and this actually goes a Thawne as well. I mean, Barry was a guy who was reading Flash comics. You know, he was reading Jay. And that was part of what inspired him. And I think that there's something really special about that, because none of the other characters are really like that. None of them had, like, you know, he's part of a legacy, more so than any of them, really, you know? And it's like, he was this guy who liked comics and liked superheroes, and then he got to become a superhero, and then he got to inspire other superheroes. You know, he got to inspire Wally, and you know, we know this, you know, pre-Flashpoint, Wally was he's the sidekick that did it, right? He became that, and part of that is because of who Barry was. And then Thawne is somebody who was also obsessed with Barry and idolized Barry in a way that Barry also idolized Jay. So I was also trying to explore some of that stuff with it, those comparisons. But yeah, with Barry, yeah, nicest guy you'll ever meet.
Now, DC's keeping you busy because you just got done a little while ago, Justice League Suicide Squad, which I really enjoyed. Are there plans for any more of that kind of thing? I know you got some other things we'll talk about in just a minute, but as far as that goes, are there other things like that that they've got in mind for you to write?
We've had a lot of conversations with things. I mean, I really want to focus on Flash. I really want to make sure that Flash is strong. You know, it's a book I love, and I don't want to, like, ever put it to the side. I always want to make sure that it's a book we focus on. I mean, but yeah, for the last year, I mean, I was working on The Flash, and then we started talking about with the Flash Rebirth stuff, because it was a big part of the beginning of Rebirth. And then I did Justice League Suicide Squad, and I did The Button, and now I'm working on some Metal stuff. And it's like, so I'm still doing other stuff on the side, and we're still doing all these big event types things along with Flash, and I think that will continue. Like, over the next couple of years, I'll keep, you know, writing Flash and doing these big stories of Flash. But yeah, we've had a lot of conversations about some interesting stuff, so we'll see.
Well, I was looking at what's coming up on DCComics.com, and I noticed you've got some real interesting places to take Barry. Because after this battle with the Reverse Flash, something interesting seems to happen to Barry. Can you talk a little bit about what's going to happen next couple issues?
Yeah, I mean, so during this storyline with Thawne, Thawne tried to trick Barry and he dragged him into the Negative Speed Force. And Barry absorbed bits and pieces of the Negative Speed Force on his way out. And so now the Negative Speed Force and his Normal Speed Force are clashing with each other because he's infected and they're in conflict. And essentially it turns Barry's powers unpredictable and slightly destructive, and he has to kind of relearn things. And it's like, you know, before Barry was the fastest man alive, and now that sort of comes with a cost. And we're going to explore that, and we're going to show how it comes with a cost and what it means to Barry to have to be this guy who understands, you know, he's always understood the science of it. You know, I mean, I think Wally's somebody who understands the spiritualness of the Speed Force in a way. I mean, because you got that from Max Mercury, but Barry's always been the science of the Speed Force, and now he doesn't know it. It's different. You know, the rules have changed because of the infection of the Negative Speed Force. Because we get to explore that a little bit and see how it affects Barry and how it having that infection of this negative thing is actually impacting him emotionally. And we get to, you see with the visual look, he's different. It's the Black Lightning, and the suit is different, and his face is sort of aging and decaying because of it. And it's actually having a toll on his body. You know, this might be spoiler stuff, but the idea that before, you know, Barry could run around as a Flash, and it would burn off calories, you know, his metabolism would have to keep up, he had to eat a lot, and he was able to manage it. But now it's like, when he does run, it does take a toll on him. It's harder, it takes him longer to recover and longer to heal, and it definitely puts him through the ringer. And we're going to explore that for a few issues and really kind of keep that roller coaster ride going. And then we have some really cool stuff planned for after that I'm excited about, that no one's ever done in the book. So,
well, you're introducing a new villain, is what I understand, by the name of Bloodworks.
Yeah, Bloodworks.
Who's got a tie to Barry and stuff like that. What can you tell us about that?
It's going to be interesting because it's kind of a scarier villain, you know, and he's going to be dealing with a lot of similar things that Barry is, but emotionally opposite of each other. You know, I can't give it away too much because it's not going to be too much of a mystery of who he is. Like, once we get in there, people will probably figure it out very quickly. But it'll be interesting the kind of toll he has on Barry. And we've been building this idea about Barry sometimes misses things because he's moving so fast. And this will be one of those things that he kind of misses for a moment and has to kind of pay the price for it. I think people will be excited when they finally see what blood work actually looks like.
Is he going to be a rogue or maybe join with them eventually? Is he going to be separate?
I mean, you have to keep reading.
Okay, we got to find out. What about Godspeed? Are we ever going to see that character again, or do you have anything in mind for him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love Godspeed. I mean, obviously, the character I created, I have a lot of ideas for him, and I think when we finally bring him back, it'll surprise people.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to it. It's always great. Thanks, Joshua. Enjoy the con.
Yeah, thanks, man. Good to see you. Thank you.
I'm talking now with Tim Seeley, who has a big assignment coming up from D.C. Do you want to talk about what it is you're going to be doing soon, Tim?
Wait, which one?
Well, Green Lanterns is the one that I know about. How about we talk about Green Lanterns?
Sounds good. Yeah, sorry. That's a good
thing. We'll get to the others later.
Yeah, all right. Green Lanterns, yeah. Yeah, we talk Green Lanterns. Yeah, so I'm writing it starting with issue 33. Right? Is that the right issue? I think, yes. Yeah. Okay. Picking up kind of from where Sam leaves it, and working with the first arc is by Edu Francisco, and it's going to be kind of a return to a sort of space police procedural. That's my take on it.
It's going to be less character oriented. Are you going to?
I think it'll be less. At least it'll be less mythology oriented. I think a lot of Green Lantern stuff deals a lot with like the history of the Green Lanterns and the other groups like Red and Blue and Purple and I think that's been very well explored. I think Sam has done a great job of it, so I'm going to do more of the, it's going to be still very character-based. It's going to be about Simon and Jessica, their relationship, and also their relationship as people in the who live on Earth and have to, like, while they are indeed space cops, they also have to live in on Earth and have normal problems. But it'll be mostly more of a, dealing with the being the protectors of Section 2814. It'll be more focused on that for a while.
What about the Justice League? Are they still going to be involved in the Justice League at this point?
Yeah, I think they're. I don't think there's any plans to kick them out anytime soon. So, and we'll definitely sort of we'll keep that in mind that they are part of this larger story and stuff. So we won't ignore that stuff.
One of the things that's happened, this is why I was asking this question. We've dealt like with Jessica's depression and Boz's relationships. Are we going to continue to explore who they are as people while this other story is going?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the characters themselves are what actually drew me to it. With the assignment, I'm not. I didn't grow up reading Green Lantern. I didn't have like a huge attachment the way I did for, let's say, Nightwing or for Batman or some of the other characters. So to me, the interest was the Jessica and Simon when they asked me about it. And I read, I'd read the stuff, and that's what I attached to, is that they're interesting people, their relationship is interesting, their job is interesting. I think that was something I was more attached to than the larger, we'll definitely use that stuff, but to me, that was the stuff that really, attracted me to the book.
If I could make one suggestion, the one thing I hope they never do is turn into a romantic relationship between the two. I think being friends are more fun.
Well, I think that would be easy, I think. Well, it would be easy and then it would ruin the book. But I think the idea that they're a male and female partnership that is not romantic comes with its own problems. Interesting character stuff, I think you can do them. I mean, if they get into relationships with other people, do they have to deal with jealousy because they're constantly together or they have to work together so closely? And you can see the parallels in real life when cops work together is, they tend to become sort of a unit of two, and the outside world is it's them against the world. I think that happens to real cops all the time. So, I mean, it makes sense that we would extrapolate that here, that maybe their relationship is more interesting and more... more powerful than a romantic relationship.
Well, I'm kind of interested because these talk about diversity. One's from another universe, and the other one is from a part of the world that we don't often see superheroes come from. So are you going to develop with those kind of things too as well? I want to get to the stories in just a second, but I'm just kind of interested. Because they're so unique as far as comics go, are you going to explore like their backgrounds and kind of maybe help us get to know them better?
I think the first arc is about the idea that, you know, Jessica's Latina and Simon is a Muslim and they live in Trump's America, and that would have an effect on their everyday life. And the first arc kind of deals with, you know, they're entrusted to be space cops for a massive sector, but, you know, they face discrimination and stuff just living on Earth, you know, and that tension, I think, is really interesting. You know, I mean, you're trusted to police an entire portion of the universe, but, you know, your family is put under scrutiny because of their religion. I think that's an interesting aspect to those characters, for sure.
What about foes, or I don't want to know the right word to use, because everybody gets a rogues gallery, and they have not yet developed their own rogues gallery. Are you planning to give them adversaries that are unique to them?
I mean, the first arc is going to deal with... basically, the first arc is going to be them against nature. And I kind of want to do... I want to do something exploring the idea that, you know, the actual science behind some of the things they do would be terrifying. And so the first arc is basically them they get assigned to evacuate a race of people from a planet that's on the edge of a supernova. As a planet goes supernova, or a star goes supernova, and the planet is right in the middle of it. And so they basically have to fight nature, this planet, physics, and then try to convince these people to leave their planet. So that's, you know, that kind of first thing. But the idea is to set them up to have new villains that aren't necessarily related to the Green Lantern Corps or to the Red Lanterns or you know, any of that sort of stuff. So, you know, that was a big goal of mine, was to do that side of their adventures.
This is kind of sci-fi on many levels, so you get a chance to really do whatever your imagination can come up with.
Yeah.
Does that appeal to you? Is that one of the reasons you took the book, was you got to do these way out kind of sci-fi things?
Yeah, I mean, I love cosmic stuff. That's always some of my favorite comics have always been the cosmic stuff, the Silver Surfers and the, you know, the New Gods. I love the New Gods. I love all the Kirby stuff. The superhero space opera has always been a favorite. So I think it's a perfect opportunity to play around with that kind of stuff. But I also want to, like, it's not going to be, you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson approved, but I do want to put some science in there. Like, okay, yes, you have this ring and you can manipulate willpower, but you still have to deal with gravity. And you still have to deal with high temperature, and you still have to deal with the fact that in space there's no water and there's no air. So how do we play with that? Like, I think there's, you know, there's a tendency just to gloss over that sort of stuff to get to everybody beating on each other with colorful rings, which is super cool. But what if we deal with, you know, what that actually would entail to some realistic degree? I mean, obviously, there's nothing realistic about a space ring that is powered by willpower, but there's a lot of cool things you can do with it, I think, while having a nod to actual science and physics.
You talked at the beginning. What other projects are you working on you can tell us about real briefly?
I'm doing Hellblazer for 3 issues, 13, 14, and 15, and I got Nightwing. And that's a lot. That'll keep me busy for a while.
All right, well, keep it up. It's great stuff. Look forward to what you're going to do with Green Lanterns.
Thanks, man. My pleasure.
It's great to talk with Gail Simone. Honor and a pleasure. How are you doing today, Gail?
I'm doing great. I always get energized when I come to this convention. And yes, it's tiring, and it's hot, and it's crowded, and all those things. But it's comics, and all the things that I love are here. And the people I love that create them and enjoy them are here. So I get really energized to be able to face another few months at home alone in my office.
Well, creating is a solitary thing.
For me, it definitely is. Yeah.
So how do you, well, that's a good question, because cons only come once in a while. How do you get yourself out of, like, being alone? Do you have social activities you do that kind of help with that?
When I'm at home? I'm pretty shy, naturally. I know that people don't understand that hear my online presence and such, but my social activities are when I come to the conventions, meet the readers and stuff, and I go to movies and concerts, and I love live performances, comedy as well as theater, and so but I live in a small town, so I have to travel to go do those things. And you know, I have a pretty great family, and we like to play games and do things together, but I'm not, you know, I'm not one to, you know, seek out a huge party per se for myself.
Okay, now you got something great coming up, Wonder Woman and Conan. Talk about that. What can you tell us about that?
I'm so excited about this Wonder Woman crossover. It's the first time Conan has ever met a DC hero, so I'm really excited about that as far from a historical perspective. But from a writing and creating and love of these characters perspective, it's really super exciting to put these two together. It's, you know, straight up sword and sorcery world, and Conan's never met anything remotely like Wonder Woman before, and he's kind of shocked at first, you know, to come up and meet her, and Wonder Woman doesn't quite understand him at first either. And it's, you've taken and put in these two gorgeous, intelligent warriors together in this universe with monsters and wizards and things, and I mean, how can you go wrong?
So is this a one shot? How many issues is it going to be?
This is a 6-issue miniseries, so it's a complete story. I've created some new villainesses for this story that look amazing and are really horrible.
Talk about Wonder Woman, because you wrote her before, but now we've had the movie since then. Has all this attention on Wonder Woman's 75th anniversary kind of put a little pressure on you to do really great stuff now, or do you feel this is just part of your thing?
I feel vindicated in that I have said all along that Wonder Woman was amazing and awesome and had all this potential. It was other people arguing with me about it, even as far as to tell me that Wonder Woman is irrelevant and no longer needed and shouldn't exist, to having her be this blockbuster movie that now everyone in the world sees what I've seen all along.
Great. I love the movie, and you know, I was thinking about other projects and stuff to get it, so it's great that this is happening. What did you think of the movie, just real briefly?
I think that Wonder Woman movie, which I never thought in my wildest dreams when I was younger would ever happen, and then all the talk about, oh, a female superhero-led movie can't be successful and everything, so I just didn't, I knew it could be. I really felt in my heart it could be, but a lot of negative talk, and so I feel like every single minute of my life that I've waited for this movie was worth the wait.
Wow, super cool. Getting back to the miniseries, as far as Wonder Woman and Conan, can you give us like a basic idea what the challenge is going to be over the 6 issues, what they're going to face?
Well, I don't want to give away too much because I'm really excited about this story and also about the absolute splendor that Aaron is putting on the page for it. But like I said, I've created some new villainesses for them to go up against and challenge them, and they do challenge them. And we get to learn a lot about Conan and Wonder Woman that we maybe didn't know before.
Are they in the DC universe? Are they in Conan's universe or somewhere else?
They're mostly in Conan's universe. Wonder Woman ends up going back in time. And so that's why we have the setting with all these monsters and wizards and sword and sorcery type.
I always wanted to ask you, as far as being like a woman creator in comics, you talked about being vindicated with Wonder Woman. Do you feel vindicated as a female creator too as well?
What I feel really great about is things that I said in the beginning when I first started writing and speaking about the industry are coming true or have come true, in that we have a 50-50 parity with convention attendees now. We have a lot more female-led books out on the stands. We have female creators and as well as editors and publishers and, you know, people working inside the industry and commentators. And I think it just helps level the playing field. I don't think we have a level playing field yet, but I think that the difference between 10 years ago and now is huge.
What do you think about the female doctor, just curious?
I am so excited. I cannot believe that that news was amazing. I've been wanting that for a while, too.
Well, we've had a female master, so now we got a female doctor.
Right.
And it's basically a clean slate, so it makes me think that you should be writing some of that stuff.
I would love to write some of that stuff.
Well, but hopefully some of the Doctor Who people are listening and stuff. Now, you had a horror series called Clean Room.
Yes.
How's that doing? Is that concluded? Do we have more coming from Clean Room?
Clean Room has concluded the first season, so that concluded with issue 18. And there will be a season 2, but we're not really announcing too much about when that's going to be coming out. Walter and I will be continuing on with that.
Okay. Other projects you're working on that we should be aware of?
Well, I have Crosswind that's coming out through Image, and I have another DC thing that's in the works that I can't talk about. And that's probably what the most of what I want to talk about right now.
Okay, well, keep up the great work. Love your writing. Miss you on Batgirl. And other things that you want to do, we'll be there to support you.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. That is amazing. Congratulations.
That's a wrap for this episode. Until next time, keep reading your comics.